low-level life signs found everywhere. "It feels empty," she said. "Well, thank you, Mistress of the Force, but pardon me if I don't stop worrying," Pavan replied sarcastically. "The good news is that there seems to be a bridge," I-5 said. Darsha moved forward to stand next to the droid. To keep her balance, she inadvertently put her hand on Pavan's shoulder, felt him tense, and move away. What was it with him? She wondered. What did he feel the Jedi had done to him to make him hate her and her kind so? Darsha remembered the look on Master Bundara's face when Pavan had introduced himself. Her mentor had known the man's name. What did that mean? She wasn't usually the prying type, but as soon as she got back to the temple, she'd do her best to find out. I-5 turned his photoreceptors up a few notches brighter and aimed them down at the bridge. Several large ropes, gray and dusty with age, stretched out from the end of the tunnel beyond the limited light put out by the droid. Across the ropes had been laid an odd assortment of flat objects, boards, pieces of sheet metal, and other odds and ends. About the only thing they had in common was that they were all more or less flat and laid out in the direction the group wanted to go. Lorne stepped out and jumped on one of the ropes. His balance was excellent, she noted, and he seemed to have a natural grace as he leapt. He saw her watching and pushed off extra hard on the last bounce, doing a quick somersault in midair. "Rope seems strong enough to me," he said, landing in a perfect double-foot plant. He waited a moment before answering her unasked question. "I used to dabble in zero-G sports when I had a better lifestyle." The droid broke in. "If you two are finished playing primitive mating games, maybe we could see about traversing this bridge. There may be a Sith pursuing us, if you recall."
"Excuse me," Lorne said. "Mating games?"
Darsha felt indignant as well.
"Your droid has a point. We need to keep moving."
"Mating games, indeed," she thought as she stepped onto the bridge. "Not likely." The going was slow. There were no handrails on the bridge, and it didn't look like the planks, lids, and other objects they were walking on had been attached very firmly to the support ropes. Indeed, Lorne got the impression that they had been added after the trestle had been formed. By the Kathans, perhaps? It was impossible to say.
"I've got to ask," Darsha said. "How did you two wind up working together?"
Lorne, somewhat to his surprise, was the one who answered. "I acquired I-5 a few years back when I first got started selling information. He was a protocol droid belonging to a rich family who left him with the children. The children were spoiled. They used to do things like make him jump off the roof to see how high he would bounce." The memory surprised him with its intensity. He recalled the smell of the junk dealer's shop, a mixture of hydraulic fluid and the ozone of cooking circuits. It had been a humid day, and he was tired. He'd been fired from the Jedi Temple only a few days previously. Not that they had called it that, of course. "I figured that he might have some interesting secrets tucked away that I could use, so I bought him and brought him back online." Lorne remembered the first words the droid had spoken. They had hit him with their utter hopelessness and helplessness.
"I am I-5YQ, programmed for protocol."
There had been a pause after the initial main sequence had activated, and then the droid had asked,
"Are you going to hurt me?"
Fury had blossomed in Lorne when he heard those words. He, too, had been broken into pieces recently, hurt savagely by those he had always been told would protect him. The Jedi. Darsha watched Lorne go quiet. Something seemed to have disturbed the man in the telling of his story, something that she felt reticent to press him on. She decided to ask the droid instead.
"So he fixed you up, and you talked him into being your partner?"
I-5 answered after a pause.
"Lorne had been treated badly recently by his employers. He felt that I was a kindred spirit, at least in potential. He had a friend who was handy at reprogramming droids install a top-of-the-line AI cognitive module and deactivated my creativity damper as well. As a result, I am as close to full sentience as any droid can be.
Intrigued, Darsha had to ask,
who were his employers?
I-5 glanced at Lorne before replying.
The Jedi.
She had suspected as much. That explained Master Bandara's recognition of the name. But why and how had the Order treated Lorne so terribly? As far as she knew, they always dealt fairly with all employees who were non-Jedi. It didn't make any sense.
How long have you trained at the temple, Padawan Asant? I-5
asked. It was plain, at least, that I-5 was a better droid than the one assigned to watch over the Fundorian in the safe house. That one hadn't recognized her as a Padawan. I've lived at the temple practically all my life. My formal teaching started when I was 4, she said. And probably ended as of today, she added silently.
I have been in business with Lorne Pavan for 5 standard years.
Then the droid went silent and left Darsha to her own thoughts. She realized that he had given her a clue to the mystery of Lorne's past. She cast her thoughts back 5 years earlier. A new student had come to the temple back then, a 2-year-old. Darsha remembered it because of the boy's high midichlorian count. She hadn't heard all the details, of course, but the temple was a small pond, and ripples of any discord traveled quickly across its surface. Apparently, the boy had been the son of a temple employee who had been fired after he agreed to let his son be trained. Why, she wasn't sure. She gave Lorne a measuring look. If he were that student's father, and if his son had been taken from him without his consent to be raised by the Order, well, then it was certainly no wonder that he hated the Jedi. She looked at Lorne again and knew her suspicion was right. It certainly explained the man's attitude toward her and Master Bandara. She felt a great upsurge of pity for him then, so much so that she had to look away from him lest he read it in her expression. She turned her focus back to their surroundings. Ever since they had entered the underground tunnels, she had periodically scanned behind them for any signs of the Sith. She had not sensed his approach before the Kathan attack, and was still hoping that he had been killed along with Master Bandara. But she couldn't take the chance of becoming complacent. She closed her eyes, keeping a slight cognizance of her immediate surroundings with the Force, and cast her awareness backwards, along the path they had traced across the old bridge, across the ledge, back into the tunnel. A cold pillar of darkness formed in her mind as her awareness reached the tunnel. Power and energy seemed to radiate off it like electricity from a thundercloud. He was right behind them.
Lorne, I-5, the Sith is behind us, almost to the bridge.
There was no response from either of them. Darsha opened her eyes and for a moment forgot about the imminent threat of the Sith. They had found the reason why the Kathans had not pursued them. Darth Maul advanced along the dark passage as fast as he dared. The path of the Jedi was very fresh now. He could sense her presence, not much farther. He saw a faint light up ahead as he came around a curve in the tunnel. The echoes of his footsteps changed, and he realized he had reached a larger open space. He sent mental investigative tendrils of the Force outward. Finding the boundaries of the ledge he stood on and the bridge just ahead, he sensed the Jedi on the bridge perhaps halfway across with Lorne Pavan and his droid just ahead of her, and beyond them. Maul frowned. There was an odd quality ahead of them in the darkness, an empty spot in the mental topography of his probe. The light, which he now realized had to be from the droid's photoreceptors, gave him a brief glimpse of something huge and oddly insubstantial, like a weaving pillar of smoke, ahead of the 3 on the middle of the bridge. Whatever it was he saw produced no corresponding vibration in the Force. This was most odd. Darsha had never seen anything like the creature that faced them on the bridge. It was huge, a great long body that stretched back at least as far as a hover bus.
Its skin was composed of segmented overlapping plates, dotted here and there with small nodules that were perhaps 2 centimeters in diameter. Its head was capped by 2 great black eyes and a pair of curved mandibles, each easily as long as her leg. Below them were an array of small clawed arms, and below that a series of short, thick legs. The most amazing thing about it, however, was that its chitinous exoskeleton and internal organs seemed to be completely transparent. Apparently, it had no internal skeletal structure. Though how a creature that size could exist without the support of bones in a one-gravity field was beyond her understanding. Darsha saw a flash of reflected light from within its midsection, a few segments back from the head, and stared in disbelief. Momentarily illuminated by I-5's photoreceptors was a pile of bones, human bones, that shifted in the thing's gut as it heaved more of its quaking mass up onto the bridge. Also in the monster's digestive tract was a more recent acquisition, a partially digested chthon. Thankfully, the droid's light failed to show it in great detail.
"Why didn't this thing show up on your sensors?" Lorne hissed at I-5 as the two backed hastily away from the giant beast.
"Perhaps you forget it was the less expensive unit you had installed, not the one with the extra sensitivity high band. Something about saving money, as I recall."
Those two would probably die arguing, Darsha thought as she backpedaled carefully, trying to keep her balance on the swaying bridge. The big question, as far as she was concerned, was why the Force hadn't warned her of this thing's presence. As she retreated, Darsha sent a questing mental beam toward the creature, and felt it disappear. There was no psychic reverberation at all. This was impossible. Maybe she wasn't an adept in the same league as Masters Yoda or Jin, but she'd have to have 0.0 midichlorians in her bloodstream not to get some kind of reading on something that huge. The creature reared up, some of its legs quivering in the light of I-5's photoreceptors. There was a sound, a kind of dry rasping, which it seemed to make by rattling its segmented chitinous plates. It towered over them and opened its mouth. Darsha activated her lightsaber as the droid fired both finger blasters, hitting several pairs of legs and scarring the creature's torso. It shrieked and slammed the upper length of its body back down on the bridge, nearly shaking the group off. They had to drop prone to keep from falling, which was lucky, because the stream of fluid that arced from the dark rictus of its mouth passed over their heads instead of coating. Even as she clung to the metal plank beneath her, it was clear to Darsha that the stuff being spat by the monster was the same substance that made up the gray silken material of the bridge. This thing had made the bridge. Something about all this seemed familiar, but she couldn't recall how or why. A vagrant stream of the silk drifted toward the Padawan, and without thinking, she moved her lightsaber to intercept it. The silk burned as it hit the yellow energy beam, vaporizing into a cloud of smelly mist. The three got to their feet and started moving quickly back down the bridge toward the tunnel. Behind them, the monster hitched itself forward, its multiple legs clinging to the silken bridge. Well, I-5's blasters hadn't worked, Darsha told herself. Let's see how well it stands up to a lightsaber. Lorne was really wishing he had a weapon right about now. Forget hand blasters. He was far past desiring something that small. Maybe a tripod-mounted V-90 or a few plasma grenades. As long as he was wishing, how about a ship-mounted turbo laser with him safely inside the ship? Where had this creature come from? One minute they were walking along the bridge, the next it was just there. Retreat was the obvious choice, but just before this thing reared its ugly head, hadn't he heard Darsha say something about the Sith being right behind them? Talk about being trapped between the black hole of Nakat and the Magateran maelstrom. At that moment he realized what the creature was. When Lorne had worked for the Jedi, he'd had access to a lot of literature about them and many related topics.
He had come across some interesting and esoteric bits of knowledge, including, in one old text, stories about a supposedly extinct species of giant invertebrates that could, after a fashion, hide from the Force. What had it been called?
Dowsin. That was it.
Apparently, they weren't extinct. At that moment, Darsha dived past him and I-5 toward the monster, her lightsaber flashing.
Darsha, stop! It's a Dowsin!
Darsha came out of her forward roll near the base of the creature, lightsaber extended. She thrust forward, angling the cut of the weapon to carve out a huge chunk of the monster's belly. Let's see how hungry you are after your prey bites back, she thought. She executed the move as perfectly as she ever had in practice. Master Bandara would have been proud. The only problem was that it didn't work. She watched in disbelieving shock as the yellow glow of her blade diffused as she sank it into the creature, losing its coherency and radiating in all directions. Darsha was so astonished by the result of her attack that she almost let the beast seize her with those sharp mandibles and pull her into the mouth that gaped overhead. At the very last moment, she scrambled back, waving the lightsaber to evaporate the gout of wet silk that it vomited toward her. She realized belatedly that Lorne had called out something to her a moment ago. It hadn't registered at first, but now it did. A Dowsin? She remembered a few references to the beasts in her first history class. Thought to be extinct, they had been one of the few living creatures ever encountered that could not be perceived through the Force. Apparently, someone had imported one to Coruscant some time in the past. There was an old Jedi adage that Master Bandara had been fond of quoting. Any enemy may be defeated at the right time. This, Darsha realized, was not the right time. She retreated toward Lorne and I-5, who had gained another few meters. The Dowsin sprayed more webbing at them. Darsha pushed with the Force, deflecting the flow of sticky fluid when she could and vaporizing it with her lightsaber when she couldn't. There was nothing else to do but keep retreating back into the clutches of the Sith. Lorne, I-5, and Darsha moved away from the Dowsin as fast as they could without dislodging the planks and plates that made up the bridge. Fortunately, for all its many feet, the creature wasn't terribly fast. It lurched along behind them, launching webbing from time to time, which Darsha managed, for the most part, to deflect. As they retreated, I-5 spoke to Lorne in a low voice, pointing at the varied surfaces they were walking on.
"Help me remove some of these."
Lorne blinked. Did I-5 think the Dowsin might fall through the cracks? He started to question the droid's instructions, but then shrugged. Apparently his companion had a plan which was more than Lorne had at the moment. Lorne estimated that they were about three-quarters of the way back to the ledge. For an instant he entertained the crazy hope that maybe Darsha was wrong and the Sith actually wasn't behind them, which would give them a little more space in which to retreat, although eventually they would re-encounter the C'thons. That hope was quickly extinguished, however, when he glanced over his shoulder and saw the twin crimson blades of the Sith's lightsaber glowing behind them. He turned back to I-5. "If you're going to do something, now would be a good time." The droid glanced back at the Sith and shook his head.
"Not yet. We need to be closer to the edge."
Lorne resisted the temptation to point out that he personally was already far closer to the edge than he cared to be. Instead, he grabbed the corner of the next support piece and tugged it free of the bridge. Maybe he would jump before he let the Sith get him. He tossed the cowling over the bridge and watched it sail out of range of I-5's photoreceptors. There was no sound of it hitting bottom. A plethora of ways to die were available here, none of them pleasant. Eaten by a monster, decapitated by a lightsaber, or falling to smash against the planet's bedrock. Lorne gritted his teeth and pulled another support free. Even with the aid of the Force,
Darsha could barely manage to keep dodging fast enough as the Dowsin fired barrage after barrage of silken webbing at her. Despite the desperate strait she found herself in, however, Darsha had never felt so deeply in the Force. So much at peace, so calm. The rational side of her mind kept reminding her that she was trapped in a tightening vice. But for some reason, that just didn't bother her. All that mattered was reacting to the monster's attack, letting the Force guide her movements. Master Bandara had told her it would be like this. "When you are one with the Force," he had once said, "you are as nothing, a calm in the storm. Chaos may rage around you, yet you are still." She kept the lightsaber moving, keeping the Dowsin at bay. Although the blade was less than fully effective against the creature, it still respected the weapon's incandescent bite. She swung it again, grazing the thing's exoskeleton and shaving a couple of small skin nodules off. They hit the bridge's surface and stuck to the webbing. Whatever the droid's idea was, it had better be quick. Darsha could feel the presence of the Sith without seeking him now. Darth Maul felt surprise as the Padawan and Pavan came closer. Neither was facing him. Instead, they were backing away from some huge, incredible creature. Once it was close enough for him to see clearly, he recognized what it was. They were supposed to be extinct, but then so were the Sith. Sidious's apprentice sent a strong tendril of power molded from the dark side toward the creature, and felt the mental probe pass through it as light penetrates transparasteel. Fascinating. Darth Maul stepped back a pace. His presence had drawn the creature's attention. It fired a thin runnel of webbing at him, and he let his connection to the Force take over, his lightsaber easily vaporizing the stream. The creature paused and spat webbing at the Sith, who was just a few meters behind them now. I-5 pulled a final object from the bridge's surface, then spoke to Lorne and Darsha.
"Now is the time. Hold on tightly to me."
The droid waited to be sure both humans had done as he said, and then jumped over the side of the bridge, hooking one of his arms around the main support rope nearest him.
"Cut the support," he said to Darsha.
Darsha understood what his plan was now. It was a bold one. She had to give him that. He and Pavan had ripped away enough of the detritus that coated the bridge's webbing to render its supports unstable. When the Padawan's lightsaber bit through the thick support cable, the section of the structure they were clinging to collapsed. As the three began falling, I-5 fired upward, his finger blasters striking the juncture of every remaining plate and the support rope they were clinging to. Their momentum increased, and suddenly they were past the tail of the Dowsin, swinging in a very long arc toward the opposite side of the chasm. After a second or two, I-5 no longer had to shoot to separate the support cable from the bridge decking. Their weight and momentum ripped the strand away for them as they fell.
"If you can slow our acceleration," the droid said to Darsha, "it will perhaps make this fall survivable."
Darsha closed her eyes, knitting her brow in concentration, and reached out for the Force once more. After a few seconds, she could feel their speed decrease. I-5 said,
"I calculate that we will reach the other side of the cavern in about..."
The trio hit the rock wall on the opposite side of the cavern. Even with Darsha's use of the Force to slow them, the impact was considerable. Darsha gasped, the wind knocked out of her. She barely managed to keep her grip.
"Well, about now,"
I-5 finished. "Thanks," Lorne managed, "for your accurate as usual timing."
"You're welcome."
They'd made it across. Now all they had to do was climb up the cable. As he fanned the vaporized webbing away from his vision with one gloved hand, Darth Maul saw his quarry jump over the side of the bridge and cut the support strand away, turning it into an escape route. For a moment, the Sith apprentice stood absolutely still, realizing how he had been outwitted. The force-dampening energy of the Daozin had prevented his sensing their escape until they were already gone. It was astounding, the amount of good fortune his prey was experiencing. He was really going to enjoy completing this mission. Just now, however, he had more pressing matters to attend to. Between the weight of the Daozin and the dismantling by his quarry, the bridge was beginning to fall apart. The Sith jumped nimbly over to the remaining support cable and began to move toward the opposite side of the cavern. He could easily cross the remaining distance before his prey climbed up out of the chasm. His athletic skills and connection to the Force made the thin support rope seem as wide as a walkway. But the Daozin had other ideas. It wound around the remaining support cable, blocking his path. Its head, now below the cable, fired another stream of webbing up at him. Again he vaporized the arcing reticulation. The creature attacked again, but in a different way this time, using its legs to vibrate the strand on which the Sith stood. Darth Maul began to fall backwards, but he did not panic. He reached out, grabbing the support cable with his free hand, careful to keep his lightsaber away from it. He now hung directly in front of the creature, only a couple of meters away from its sharp mandibles. He knew now that he wouldn't be catching up to Pavan and the others within the next few minutes. He spun his lightsaber over in a perfect execution of slashing wampa and cut the remaining bridge support that he clung to. He and the Daozin fell away in opposite directions. He slamming against the wall on the opposite side from the three fugitives, while the Daozin disappeared into the abyss. Unfortunately, disposing of the creature had also disposed of his only route across the cavern. Darth Maul climbed up the support cable to the ledge from whence he had come. He gritted his teeth. Even with the Force to aid him, he could not leap across a chasm this wide. He would have to retrace his route back up to the surface, which was frustrating beyond bearing. He knew he would find them again. There was no place in the galaxy he could not follow them, and he would not fail, however long it took. But to be so close and to fail yet again, it enraged him. They would pay for this in full. Obi-Wan Kenobi shouldered through the doors of the Tusken Oasis, and for a few seconds felt as though he had returned up levels. The club was lavishly decorated and well kept. A quartet of Bith musicians were playing something lively in the corner, their large bulbous heads bobbing in time to a melody from their leader's omnibox. Only after looking more closely at the patrons of the club was he reminded that he was still below levels in the Crimson Corridor. Gamorrean bodyguards carrying blasters mingled with their gambling clients, and many patrons without paid protection carried their own weapons. There was enough firepower in the room to start a small revolution. As Obi-Wan let his senses ride the currents of the Force and expand into the club, feeling its pulse, so to speak, he sensed a wrongness, an out-of-step sequence. Something had happened here not too long ago. Of that he was sure. He moved toward the large bar at the back of the room and noticed that he was being watched. Several Rodians at the end of the bar followed him with their black featureless gaze, snouts quivering. The bartender was of a species that Obi-Wan did not recognize. Its dark blue head had no neck, instead flowing smoothly into large shoulders from which draped six muscular arms resembling serpents. At the end of each arm was a pair of digits. Two arms were currently mixing a large drink, while another tapped information into a datapad. As Obi-Wan approached the bar, he saw the remaining three arms drop down below the level of the bar. It didn't take the skills of someone like Yoda to guess that a weapon was being readied down there. The bartender looked at him with an expression that on a human face would have been called a scowl.
"What you want?"
it croaked in thickly accented basic. "I'm looking for some information."
"Don't have any,"
the bartender rumbled, a fourth arm slithering furtively down under the bar to join the other three. Obi-Wan could feel the tension building.
"Be in the moment. Be aware only of the present."
He had heard Master Qui-Gon's admonition so many times, it seemed almost as though his Jedi mentor was standing next to him. Obi-Wan reached out with his mind and felt what could not be seen. The bartender was close to activating a blaster under the bar, which was pointed straight at the Padawan's abdomen. The two Rodians had split up and were flanking him now, just out of lightsaber range. He could sense their weapons being readied as well. What were they waiting for? Then he noticed the bartender's four eyes glance over at a tiny pair of crystals inset in the bar's surface near the datapad, seemingly part of the design. One was lit. It glowed red. Near it was a green crystal, unlit. As he watched, the red crystal winked out and the green crystal lit up. Events slowed and perception stretched then, as Obi-Wan Kenobi reached for the Force and his lightsaber simultaneously. He dropped flat on the floor as the bartender fired its weapon, sending pieces of the beautiful wooden bar exploding outward to shower the apprentice with splinters. He ignited his lightsaber and swung it up in a shallow arc, the super-hot blade slicing almost without resistance through the bar and the blaster it concealed, without touching the bartender's prehensile limbs. He rose to his feet quickly, almost levitating with the aid of the Force, and continued the arc, twisting to face the Rodians who had raised their weapons. He gestured, and one of the blasters leapt out of its surprised owner's hand and seemingly flung itself across the room. His partner fired a particle beam burst that was deflected by the cobalt-hued energy blade, sending its trajectory off into the ceiling somewhere. Obi-Wan gestured again, and the second Rodian's blaster flew over to land at his feet. All around him, the club's habitués had stopped their gambling to watch, many dropping instinctively into defensive postures, weapons ready, or hiding behind their bodyguards. Sensing the immediate danger was over, they turned back to their games of Sabacc, Dejarik, and other pursuits. Obi-Wan turned around and faced the bartender, his lightsaber already deactivated. "Like I said, I just want some information. No trouble." Although he couldn't read the being's face, Obi-Wan noted that the color of the bartender's head had altered to a much lighter shade of blue, and that it seemed to be having trouble with its respiration. He sensed movement behind him. The Rodians were moving in again. He turned to face them.
"That's enough, boys," someone said. "Our Jedi guest isn't here to cause a problem, are you, friend?"
"Kenobi. Obi-Wan Kenobi. And as I mentioned to your bartender, all I'm looking for is information." The Padawan turned to face the new arrival, who was a short, muscular human, with a large braid of hair trailing down his back. There was an aura of power about him, not Force-related, just sheer animal prepotency.
"I'm looking for information, too, Jedi Kenobi," the man said. "Perhaps we can help each other. My name is Dal Perry."
Perry led Obi-Wan down a short flight of stairs and along a corridor, apologizing as they walked.
"Sorry about the rough stuff, but we had to be sure you really were a Jedi. The fact that you didn't even have to harm any of our boys speaks for itself. The Jedi are known, after all, for valuing life." There was more than a touch of sarcasm to his tone. Obi-Wan smiled tightly.
"And the Black Sun are not. You realize, if I hadn't been a Jedi, I would likely be dead now." The gangster nodded.
"As I said, a simple precaution. You'll see why in a minute. Just part of doing business, Jedi Kenobi."
"Are you taking me to see Yanth the Hutt?"
The gangster glanced at the Padawan. "Good guess."
They reached the end of the corridor and passed through a pair of wide doors that looked as if they had been melted in the center. As they entered the room, Obi-Wan immediately noted several Gamorrean guards lying on the floor. He was no forensic specialist, but it seemed as though they had been shot with blasters. He stepped over a broken Force pike and followed Perry toward a large shape on the floor ahead. He knelt down and examined the wound that had killed the Hutt. It looked almost as if it might have come from a lightsaber. That wasn't possible, of course. It had to be a blaster burn. He looked over at the Black Sun representative.
Could it be that his organization was having one of its periodic infighting episodes?
I was hoping, Jedi Kenobi, that you might be able to shed a little light here. Isn't there some, Perry gestured vaguely, mystic way you can tell who did this? Perry obviously felt there was some cabalistic way his Jedi guests could learn what had happened here. A master such as Mace Windu could probably make sense of it, but Obi-Wan was not a master. He wasn't even a Jedi Knight yet. He shook his head. I'm sorry, perhaps if I'd been here earlier. The gangster nodded. Obi-Wan sensed his disappointment, though Perry hid it well. Not your fault. Thanks anyway. Obi-Wan was surprised to find that he felt slightly relieved. After all, if he'd found it was Darsha or Master Bandara who had perpetrated this carnage. But in all probability, it was not. But who could it have been?
No one saw who did this, he asked Perry.
No. You'd think there'd be at least one witness, but everyone says they couldn't get a good look at him, even when he ran right by them.
Obi-Wan nodded. That could be the natural reticence to get involved, usually found in people on the far side of the law, or in fear of retribution. He walked toward the exit, followed by Perry.
Jedi Kenobi?
Yes.
I've never had the pleasure of seeing one of you work until today. What you did up there in the bar? Are all Jedi that good?
Obi-Wan stopped and turned to face Perry.
No, they're not.
The gangster seemed to relax slightly, but his expression changed as Obi-Wan continued. I'm only an apprentice. In terms of fighting skills, I'm probably least among the Jedi.
The Padawan had the satisfaction of watching the gangster pale slightly. Then he turned and left Yanth's underground office and the Tusken Oasis. With any luck, he had given Dal Perry something to think about. As he returned to the street, Obi-Wan mentally reviewed what he knew so far. Not much, unfortunately. So far, all he knew for certain was that Darsha Asant had lost the informant she was assigned to protect. Her skyhopper had been gutted by a street gang, and her master's skycar had been destroyed after a supposed brawl with a cowled figure. He had seen the vehicles, but no body for the informant, no Darsha, and no Master Bandara. Add to that the fact that a black sun Vigo, Yanth the Hutt, had been killed by a cowled figure. There had been a sense of corruption pervading the location, similar to what he had experienced at the crash site of Bandara's skycar. Obi-Wan sighed. He hadn't exhausted all his leads yet. There was still the block of cubicles to investigate. He checked the address he had been given and started to walk. With any luck at all, he might learn something there that would shed some light on the entire mess. No such luck. At the site of the cubicle explosion, Obi-Wan had learned some very interesting news. But it was news that served only to muddy the waters further. One of the local police investigating the incident had told him that Hathmon Char, the Nemoidian deputy viceroy of the Trade Federation, had been the tenant of the blasted cubicle, and that he, too, had been killed. It seemed obvious that Black Sun was somehow mixed up in all this. There was no evidence anywhere to suggest that the crime cartel was in bed with the Trade Federation, but it was possible, certainly. Too many questions, Obi-Wan thought. Too many questions, and not nearly enough answers. There was light at the end of the tunnel. Lorne, I-5, and Darsha hurried toward it. They reached a doorway, the partially boarded-over entrance to another kiosk similar to the one by which they had entered the underground, and emerged into the tenebrous shadows of Coruscant's Crimson Corridor section. It was like stepping into bright sunlight compared to the labyrinth they'd been trapped in for so long, but they couldn't afford to rest or even slow down. They had to assume that the Sith was still somewhere behind them, still pursuing them, which was the worst of their problems, but by no means the only one. Lorne figured that in all likelihood the bank security personnel were after him at I-5 by now as well. The transaction fraud they had committed would probably have also attracted the notice of the planetary police, and very possibly a few Republic Treasury agents. It had also occurred to Lorne that Black Sun might have a few questions for him. Depending on what kind of records Yanth had left of his business dealings and what the eyewitnesses at the Tuscan Oasis had pieced together. In short, probably just about every organized power on the planet was looking for him and I-5. Darsha spoke.
My people will no doubt have sent out searches by now. If we can get to a comm station, all we have to do is alert them to come pick us up.
Right, the Jedi. He'd forgotten about them. That made one more at the party. I-5 said,
"We are in an area with very few operating public comm stations. It's likely there will be a higher quantity of functional ones some levels up."
Sharp, Lorne thought. There were stations to be found if you knew where to look, but he didn't want to give Darsha a chance to drag them back to the temple just yet. Back there in the tunnels, during the endless search for a way out, he'd managed to whisper a few instructions to the droid without Darsha hearing him. I-5 knew Lorne wanted to get to Tudensal as quickly as possible, without the Jedi Padawan.
"So we're back to the question of the day.
How do we get up levels?" Darsha asked. It was extremely frustrating. They had never been more than half a kilometer from one of the most cosmopolitan areas in the galaxy. The only problem was, it was half a kilometer straight up. The possibility of freedom lay only a score of levels over their heads, and yet it might as well be on one of the orbiting space stations for all that they could reach it. All things considered, Lorne thought, it was hard to see how things could get any worse.
"We are being watched," the droid said.
Even as the droid spoke, Darsha could feel them. More than one, of different species, with an unmistakably malign intent. "Why am I not surprised?" Lorne said. "Any way to tell exactly who is watching us?" Darsha reached out with her senses and felt familiar signatures. She was sure she had come across them before, recently. "It's not the Sith," she said, and saw the broker relax, and then she recognized the vibration in the Force.
"It's..."
"Hey, lady, still slumming?" It was Greenhair, the leader of the Raptor gang that had attacked her when she first touched down in the corridor. Three of his cronies, the Trandoshan, a Saurin, and a Deveronian, were with him.
"You're in our territory, and you gotta pay the toll."
Darsha almost laughed. It seemed like years ago that she'd been nervous about facing this riffraff. Her perspective had radically changed in the last 36 hours. Something of what she felt must have gotten across to the Raptor leader, because he looked worried for a few seconds.
"I said..." he began.
Lorne interrupted him.
"What you said and what you're going to get are two entirely separate things. Listen up. This is how it's going to play. You give us your money now, all of you. And you..." he pointed at the leader, "are taking us on a tour."
Greenhair could not have looked more shocked if Lorne had shoved a power prod against his chest. He stood there like a statue for a few moments, his electrostatic hairdo quivering slightly in the low breeze. His mates looked uneasy as well. This kind of confidence was not something they encountered often on their turf. They glanced at Greenhair, and Darsha did not need the Force to read what was in that look. They were waiting for him to make a decision. It was equally obvious that Greenhair knew what was expected of him. He looked back at his crew, then at Darsha, Lorne, and I-5. "Take 'em!" he shouted, jumping toward Lorne. Lorne sidestepped, tripping the youth as he rushed by. I-5 hammered the green head with one metal fist, and the boy went down. The Trandoshan lunged forward, a vibroblade extended. The droid used his finger blaster to heat the vibrating blade to incandescence. With a scream, the Trandoshan dropped the blistering metal and bolted into the shadows, cradling his burned hand with his other one. Darsha was deep in the Force, knowing what her attackers were going to do before they did it. It was far easier than facing the Dowsin.
Before she was even aware of reaching for it, the lightsaber was in her grasp, its blade gleaming in the shadows as she deflected the blaster bolts that whizzed from the Deveronian's weapon toward her and her friends. She thrust out her free hand, and the Sauron's blaster leapt from his hand toward Lorne, who caught it. He thumbed the set into stun and fired twice. The remaining two gang members collapsed on the street's cracked ferrocrete alongside their stunned leader. The skirmish had taken no more than a few seconds. Lorne and I-5 began searching the three unconscious bodies.
"What are you doing?"
the Padawan asked.
"What does it look like?" Lorne replied. "We are taking from those who don't need and giving to those who do, namely us. We've got to have credits to get up levels."
Darsha started to say something, then thought better of it. She didn't like scavenging off the bodies, but she could see the necessity. Greenhair stirred and moaned. Lorne prodded him with the blaster.
"Up," he said. Greenhair got to his feet, not looking too happy. "I'm sure you boys have a way up levels," Lorne said to him. "Let's go find it."
Lorne prodded the raptor with his newly acquired blaster. He felt much better now that he had a weapon. True, it wasn't much, only a Blastech DH-17, without optical sighting arrays, and with its power charge nearly depleted. But it had made a satisfying sizzle when he'd fired it during the short battle. He'd also picked up a vibroblade. These weapons might not help him if the Sith caught up with them, but they were better than facing his nemesis empty-handed. There was another reason to celebrate. Since he and I-5 had been the only ones to check the unconscious bodies of the raptors, Darsha had missed I-5's find. The droid had flashed it at Lorne when she had been watching Greenhair. It was a small comlink, no doubt keyed to the raptor who had owned it, but both Lorne and I-5 had hacked comlinks often enough that he knew getting around basic security would be no problem at all. The three of them set out, following their unwilling guide, alert for any deception on his part. He led them toward an alley about 200 meters from the direction he'd come. Now, if I-5 could just get a few minutes away, or have a chance to socket the comlink into his data plug, he could call Tudun Sahl and set up a meeting. Things were looking better and better, Lorne told himself. He and his partner just might be able to get themselves safely off-planet after all. Of course, it would mean dropping Darsha. A prospect that, he had to admit, he wasn't looking forward to nearly as much as he thought he would. After all, she had helped keep him alive through this nightmare. Though it galled him to admit it, the truth was that he was growing somewhat fond of her. True, she was younger than he was by a considerable factor, but there was still a certain attractive quality to her. "Remember," he told himself sternly, "she's a Jedi." Darth Maul stalked the underground passage back the way he had come, his rage boiling into the darkness like superheated steam. He was back in the transport tube now. Ahead of him he could see light shining down from overhead where he'd cut through the ventilation grid. Maul gathered the force to himself and jumped straight up, rising several body lengths, to shoot through the opening. Not far away, the wreckage of the Twi'lek Jedi's sky car and its attendant debris still partially blocked the streets. The Sith Lord considered how he might best locate his quarry. Once he reacquired their trail, he could easily locate them. The weakness of that strategy was that he would still be following them. There had been far too much of that. Much better to get ahead of them somehow and be waiting for them. Maul recalled the method by which he'd located the Nemoidian earlier. Perhaps the planetary netcams would be useful to him again. If he could find the most recent location where the humans had been seen, he could save time tracking them by going straight to it. But to begin his search, he needed a data terminal, and there were none to be found in this urban jungle. He was reminded of something Lord Sidious had once told him. "For every solution, there are two problems." Darth Maul considered for a moment, then activated his wrist comm and holoscreen monitor. He calmed the infiltrator, tapped into its main computer, and used that to access the port data link, bypassing the regular navigation request screens until he located a menu offering access to other networks. his master's password again opened locked doors, and within a few seconds he had called up several data sources. The first was a holomap of this section of the Crimson Corridor. Maul located his current position and tapped in the last known vectors for the humans and the droid. The planetary databank gave him the information he wanted. It was as he had suspected. They were heading in the direction of the Jedi Temple, using the droid's global positioner to guide them. Fortunately, they still had a long way to go, not only toward the temple, but up levels as well. He zeroed down to street level and identified several exits from the subterranean passages that they might have used. Next, he tapped into Coruscant's security network and called up a listing of surveillance cams near those exits. He flashed through hundreds of images from the last few minutes, finding nothing that would help him. He left the link open and shifted to check recent crimes in the area. Not surprisingly, hundreds of incidents popped up for the last few hours in the Crimson Corridor. Street fights, petty theft, other common crimes. He noted in passing an oddity. A droid was being sought for scamming the banking system, but he found nothing recent that had happened in the target areas that would serve him. Darth Maul scowled. He needed transportation. That way he could get nearer his target zones. He considered the problem. As he did so, his comm flashed that he had an incoming message. He felt a finger of worry touch him. It could be only his master. The thought of not answering did not occur to the Sith. He toggled the secure communications mode, dumping his connection to the security net, and waited for the readout to confirm his scrambled signal. Sidious's voice crackled over the comlink.
Time grows short, my apprentice. What is the state of your current project?
My master, I have obtained the holocron. I am holding it for your inspection. There have been delays in finding the human whom the Nemoidian spoke with, but they are now within my grasp. I shall not fail you. Darth Sidious was silent for a second before he replied.
See that you do not. When they are dead, contact me, and I will instruct you in how to deliver the holocron. Be very careful not to reveal our presence, Lord Maul. It is not yet time.
Yes, my master. Darth Maul moved toward the clearing where the Jedi Skycar had crashed. It would be a good location to try what he had planned. He reached out with his senses. There was no sign of Jedi anywhere close now. It had certainly turned out to be a much more interesting mission than he had thought it would be. Maul settled himself in the shadows beyond the area where the Skycar had crashed and reaccessed the planetary security grid, using the same technique he had before. Few taxi drivers could be enticed to enter the Crimson Corridor, and even the security forces did not enter the zone without good cause. But good cause was something he could supply. This time, instead of activating the menu, he scanned the current patrol routes for this quarter of the city. High above, still several kilometers away, were a pair of patrol officers on speeder bikes, circling on their regular beat. Maul noted their designations and then accessed the dispatch queue for emergency calls. He fed data directly into the dispatch computer. Eventually, an audit might reveal this call to be a ruse, with no comlink recording, but it would serve for now. The bait he chose was the droid banking crime. The police would be wary of any dangerous call-outs for the area, but they would perhaps be less concerned with a white-collar crime conducted by someone's mechanical servant. It was the best enticement he could come up with on short notice. Having set out his lures, the Sith apprentice waited to see what he might catch. He did not have to wait long. A few minutes after he'd entered the data into the security net, two police speeder bikes came roaring in from up levels, strobe lights flashing. From the shadows in which he crouched, Darth Maul prepared to move. Abruptly, he halted. At the edge of his perceptions was something else. He reached for it, projecting jagged tendrils of the Force to discover what lay unseen. And then, as his probe reached it, it swung lower into view, hovering above the crash site. It was a PCBU, a droid-piloted police cruiser backup unit.
The Crimson Corridor had been the site of a number of officer murders over the years, which was why the PCBU had been developed. It carried two state-of-the-art swivel laser cannons, mounted on the top and bottom of the unit, as well as a variety of sensors, scanners, and disruptors. Maul watched it approach. He had not expected the arrival of such a heavily armed craft, but it would delay his plans only slightly. He waited until the unit had passed him, following the two speeder bikes, and then acted. He seized the force and used it to propel himself high into the air to land on the top of the PCBU. His lightsaber blades ignited as his feet hit the surface of the craft, and he quickly sheared the upper gun free of its mount, spinning the double-ended blade after this to cleave through the transferosteel cockpit bubble and the droid pilot. The PCBU began to descend, its autopilot taking over now that the droid was no longer activated. Either the speeder bike patrol officers had noted the descent of the craft, or the driver of the PCBU had had time to get off a signal, because they spun their speeders around and flew toward him. Excellent. One speeder bike was ahead of the other. Maul deactivated one of his lightsaber's blades and hurled it toward the first of the oncoming speeders like a spear. It pierced the officer's armored chest while the Sith, again assisted by the Force, jumped from the descending PCBU toward the other officer. By the time he had landed on the speeder, his lightsaber had rejoined him, snatched back to him by a feathery runner of the Force. Within moments, the second police officer was dead, and Darth Maul had his transportation. With no witnesses, there was little chance of anyone suspecting the use of the Force, and the entire operation had been accomplished quickly enough that, in all probability, neither of the two officers had had a chance to send a distress signal. Immediately, he lifted off on one of the speeder bikes, heading up levels to get ahead of his quarry. He set the speeder into a vertical spiral and checked his wrist comm as he rose. Again, he noted nothing unusual in the target area. However, one of the CAN pickup sites seemed unusually devoid of traffic. Something about it. Darth Maul replayed the scene again at a slower speed. Yes, right there. A flicker of something. He watched the security cam footage play again, slowing it even more. Nothing, nothing, and then abruptly, there he was. It was unmistakably his target. The information broker known as Lorne Pavan. The Sith checked the timestamp on the data. The image had been recorded only about 20 minutes ago. He accelerated the speeder toward the location given on the screen. He had them now. Lorne poked the Raptor leader in the back with the barrel of his blaster as they reached the alley. "Hold it," Lorne said. He turned to Y-5 and Darsha. "Any warnings from the science and sorcery team?" he asked. "And don't start whining again about the cheap sensor suite I had installed in you," he added to the droid.
"Well, it was less expensive than the Mark 10.
"But more expensive than the other five choices, a lot more expensive." Lorne glanced at Darsha as he spoke, intending to ask her if she was receiving anything on the Force bandwidth, and was somewhat surprised to see that she was smiling. What was even more surprising, downright shocking, actually, was the way he found himself reacting to that smile. He liked it. He liked her. This was bad. He knew he would soon have to break clear of her. There was just no way he was going back to the temple. Sure, she was nice-looking, but he'd had nice-looking before, lots of times since Sienna had left him. This was definitely not the direction in which his best interests lay. It was best to cut this off right here and right now. Raise the blast shields, secure the airlocks, bolt the hatches. But instead, to his horror, Lorne realized he was smiling back.
"I don't sense any large life forms in the alley for what it's worth," she told him.
Lorne nodded, looked away, and prodded the Raptor again with his blaster. "Okay, killer, lead on." Lorne followed Greenhair into the alley, his mind still very much on the wordless interchange that had just taken place between him and Darsha. Had she somehow felt what he was thinking?
Use the Force to peer at his naked emotions? He hoped not.
But let's face it, he told himself, she was a Jedi. She certainly had the ability to do such a thing, and in Lorne's experience, people who had skills tended to use them. He tried to feel angry, to feel invaded by her action, but all he felt was curiosity. Curiosity as to whether there was any attraction on her side.
I-5 broke into his thoughts.
I concur with Padawan-san's conclusions about life forms, but you might be interested to know that there are two active power relays in the first 15 meters of...
Lorne, watch it! He's going to try something!
Darsha shouted from behind.